little boys and they're born, the moment they pop out, they're told that their job is to protect their mother. They're never allowed to just be child and be defenseless. And so they just get sort of sent out into the world much, much more so than girls. And so they get into all these situations without understanding what's going on until it's too late.
Welcome to Ending Domestic Abuse, a one-of-a-kind virtual resource for helping victims escape abuse, empowering survivors, and preventing relationship violence before it can even start, by giving you the tools to improve your confidence, life skills, and hope. I'm your host, Dr. Ludi Green, a national expert on violence against women and children. I have advocated across the world and directly helped more than 1,000 abused women regain and maintain their freedom through economic independence. On my podcast, you will hear from top experts in fields like finance, economics, psychology, and many more. And you'll hear stories from people who have defied the odds, overcome abuse, and found their way to success. Together, we'll offer you support and practical ideas to pursue your goals, start on a new path, and protect yourself and others from abuse. Today's episode will feature a psychotherapist, author, and teacher who specializes in supporting survivors of trauma, including men who have experienced abuse as children. We are so honored to have Merle Yost on to share his expertise and act as your virtual mentor. Let's meet him after this short break. Ending Domestic Abuse is brought to you by Audible. Something you need to know about me is that I love to multitask. I'm a mother, a wife, and as an entrepreneur who had to build her own path to success, I'm always looking for ways to continue learning and to use my time more effectively. Audible has been a great resource for me. I can access hundreds of audiobooks from the palm of my hand and listen to them as I commute to work, while I cook dinner, or when I go on a run. Listeners who have enjoyed some of our episodes on self-care will love Audible's huge list of self-help books, as well as their guided wellness program. It is so important to continue to learn and improve yourself. You are worth it. Don't wait. Head to audibletrial.com/endingdomesticabuse to start your free trial so they know we sent you. All proceeds will go to improving this podcast to help even more victims of violence. Once again, that is audibletrial.com/endingdomesticabuse. Welcome back to Ending Domestic Abuse. And this is your host, Dr. Ludi Green. On Ending Domestic Abuse, we hear from people of all backgrounds coming together to help end violence and assault within the home. Many of our conversations can be quite difficult as they deal with heavy topics. However, it is so important to create a space where this conversation can happen openly to help bring awareness to the ways in which domestic violence can present itself. We have talked in the past on the show about how media portrayals of abuse can often create a warped sense of what abuse looks like and what a victim or survivor of abuse looks like. For example, media portrayals of domestic violence often focus on the signs of abuse that are mostly clearly seen or heard. Someone yelling at their partner so loudly neighbors can hear. Victims and survivors covering up bruises with makeup, or people pushing or hitting a partner in public. While these are all very serious signs of domestic violence, they only scratch the surface of the ways in which someone can abuse their partner. In reality, there's not one type of abuse or one type of victim. One group that is often overlooked in conversations about abuse is men and boys. According to the Center for Disease Control, nearly 1 in 4 men report some form of sexual violence in their lifetime, and 1 in 10 men report experiencing intimate partner violence. The CDC also reported that most first-time victimizations occur before the age of 25, with many victims first experiencing violence before age 18. However, men are usually less likely to report abuse due to societal standards and pressures. This is why it is so important to have open conversations about the realities of domestic and sexual abuse to help break stigma so people are able to share their stories and report their situations to the proper channels to get help and support. Today, we are honored to have a guest join us who has dedicated his career to helping support people who have experienced trauma in their lifetime, including men who experienced sexual abuse in their childhoods. In addition to his work with abuse survivors, our guest also helps people to set personal boundaries to better their lives and well-being. We are honored to have psychotherapist, author, and teacher Meryl Yost with us today. Meryl, welcome to the show. We're thrilled to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Yes, thank you so much for being here with Ending Domestic Abuse, and we're excited to be speaking with you on this podcast. Could you start off by introducing yourself to our listeners and sharing a bit about you, your interests, and your background?
Certainly, I'd be happy to. I'm a psychotherapist in California. I've been licensed since 1995. It seems like several lifetimes ago. I specialized in working with men, and particularly men who were sexually abused as children. That shows up in a lot of different ways and before it ends up in my office. But I'm also an author. I've published 6 books, the most recent one, Facing the Truth of Your Life. I teach workshops. At this point, in the past, I taught a full-day workshop called Shedding Light on the Sexual Abuse of Boys and the Men They Become, which I'm hoping to turn into a video workshop in the near future. But currently, I just have a one on energetic boundaries and how to best take care of yourself in the world.
Could you please tell me a little bit, you chose psychotherapy as your career. Why did you decide to pursue this career path?
Well, my mother's dream was that I'd be a doctor and a professional singer. It turned out to be neither my path for different reasons. So due to my own horrific sexual abuse as a child in a really nightmare household and family, it was a short version. It was a cult organized around my mother's delusions, and my father was physically and brutally sexually abusive to me. And so I had my own 20 years of psychotherapy and 40 or 50 years now of work on myself to heal from all of that. So when it got clear that I wasn't going to be a professional singer, I had a good voice. It just wasn't my passion. It wasn't my path. And I wasn't going to be a doctor. And so I went into business and was fairly successful. And one of my roommates back in college was seeing a therapist. He thought I might benefit from seeing a therapist. So I went to see his therapist, and she and I hit it off. It really worked. And the very first session, I'm sitting there in her office, and psychotherapy was completely unknown to me at this point. This was like a completely, because I was grew up in this very isolated world. And she said, "You seem frightened of me. You seem frightened. Are you frightened of me?" And I said, "No." She said, "So what are you frightened of or anxious about?" And I said, "What's inside of me?" Because I unconsciously knew there was a whole lot there that I didn't know or remember, because I had lots of occluded memory. And so when I was studying to be an EMDR therapist back in 1993 with Francine Shapiro, who invented it, they told us to pick something insignificant or small so that we didn't open up a huge can of worms. And so I picked my fear of tall buildings. I look up at a tall building, I'd just about pass out. And we didn't understand why I had this odd phobia. And then so about 30 seconds, since the very first day, first training, we were practicing the technique. And about 30 seconds into doing this protocol, my head goes back, a cough goes down my throat, and I dissociate profoundly. So it was the beginning of the actual memories of the abuse coming back. That's of the sexual abuse. There were plenty of other abuse in the family. This was just the really horrific sexual abuse. So that was, and so I'd already become a therapist at that point, because when I went into therapy, as much as I liked business, I was really good with people. And I really cared about people, was very empathic with them. And so, and learning about therapy, it really got clear to me, this is what I wanted to do. And so I went back to graduate school I got my master's so I could become a psychotherapist.
Wow. That is unbelievable what you're sharing. I mean, I'm being like in shock. I was not aware of it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Your whole experience. And really, really, you know, I have my own experience myself, but really I respect highly that you have even share online and saying what happened to you and how happened. And I'm sure there's so many people, you know, of the listeners that they may be going through the same thing, and horrible things. And through your words, they will be able to ask for help and know that there's a way to get out of this, you know, that you did it and then successfully right now helping so many. So thank you so much, Meryl, for this. It's unbelievable. I understand that in addition to your work as a psychotherapist, you lead workshop focused on setting personal boundaries. Can you share with us, some people struggle to create boundaries and how people can work to strengthen their boundaries?
Well, most of our conversation about boundaries, unfortunately, is really about feeling victimized by other people. And so we all blame them. And I think it's a complete missing the point of boundaries, and the people don't really understand how they really work. And so my workshop, 7 Steps to Powerful Boundaries, teaches people, it starts with the, first of all, boundaries is, the definition of boundaries is where I stop and where you start. That is a boundary. And so too many people have the model of merging and feeling other people's feelings for them and immediately losing that boundary. It's just not healthy. It's not useful because you're sucking up their stuff like a vacuum cleaner. Then you have to figure out how you're going to get rid of it, if you even can. So we're all energetic beings. We're made up of atoms. And so in order to actually understand boundaries, you have to understand your energy field and how to work with that energy field. And that's the core. That's the heart of the program that I teach. To truly understand your boundaries and why you do what you do, you have to go back to your childhood. Just what I call the dance of intimacy. Our parents, our families teach us how to be in the world, and they teach us what boundaries are. Father teaches us how to be with men. Our mother teaches us how to be with women. And so we just assume that's how the world works. And we go out there and then we recreate our families at work. We marry our spouses. our parents through our spouses. And so we just keep recreating that dance of intimacy that we learned in our family. So we have to go and really step back and examine that to say, well, if your family structure was to shame and humiliate you, that's what you took in is what love means. But you're going to look for people who shame and humiliate you because that's how you've been programmed to think that's how love works. So you have to go back and address all of that. So that's the first step in claiming your boundaries, saying, well, no, this doesn't really work for me, and I'm not going to let those kind of people in my life. That's a real boundary.
So it's incredible, your workshop, really. I'm curious now myself to go into that. Sounds
and
amazing.
And so I take them back through their childhood and their relationships. I ask questions like, when you grew up, who loved you unconditionally? Who that no matter what you did, you know that they loved you, and who gave conditions around your being loving to you, or who abused you and called that love. And so by starting to parse that and start looking at that and saying, well, this works for me and this really doesn't, that's really the beginning of healing. So I take people through all of this, and I take them by one of my favorite exercises in step one is that I take people on a guided imagery from birth up to about 18 years of age. Because it's really important to go back and see how powerless you were. But yet babies take responsibility for all of that stuff that goes on around them because they're the center of the universe. It's their fault. If mom and dad don't show up to pick them up at the library or after story hour, they did something wrong. It wasn't mom and dad who screwed up because it's normally narcissistic. It's all about them. So that all has to be understood and dealt with. But so that's just step one. Just going through all of this and the whole lifespan.
Yeah, so many. Are there any stories you can share with us of someone successfully strengthening their personal boundaries in the impact that I don't know?
One of the, this is back when I was doing the full day workshops, but this woman, actually give you a current example too. There was a therapist who took my workshop, and she's a lovely woman, and she saw 9 people a day. That's a lot of clients in one day, and I used to do that all the time as well, so I understand. And so she'd be exhausted at the end of the day and need to come home, get a cocktail, and sit in a dark room for a while to recover after seeing all those people because she'd absorbed all of this stuff from them. And so after she took the workshop, the next the next working day, actually, that happened at that, she called home and told her husband she was on her way home, and he said she'd be there shortly. And he said, well, should I have your cocktail ready? And she said, no, I'm fine. And she gets home, walks in, and says, you sure you don't need a cocktail? She says, no. She says, I'll just freshen up, make dinner. And she looked at her and said, Merle.
Wow.
She said, yeah. It completely changes how you experience being in the world.
You know, I'm more curious now about your system, because I have served so many victims of violence, I mean, on a regular basis. And I remember, you know, learning the stories, you know, just by learning and trying to absorb it and trying to figure it out how we're going to help. It really drained me. And at night, I remember coming from my nonprofit. I did that for 12 straight years. And it was on a daily basis. And now sometimes I wanted to just go to bed and not even, I'm out of the room, you know? And now that I'm hearing from you, I mean, so if we go through this workshop, people like myself and other people serving in this type of, you know, serving this type of groups, they can really heal and they can really protect themselves,
and And you'll be a better healer because you aren't absorbing their stuff.
Correct. Wow, this is really powerful, Merle. I'm like so grateful to have you in the program. Another thing I wanted to tell you, in our podcast, we often discuss how anyone from any background can be impacted by domestic violence and sexual violence. And I understand some of your work is focused on bringing awareness to reality of sexual abuse for boys and men. Can you speak a bit about the importance of this work and how people can support this community experiencing violence?
Yes. Okay. First of all, the official statistics is something like 1 in 6 boys and 1 in 3 girls are sexually abused. It's completely misleading. Boys are, one, dramatically underreported, and two, they often don't even know that it was sexual abuse. They sometimes think they were lucky, which is really scary. So the problem is that girls get protected more than boys. So little boys, when they're born, the moment they pop out, they're told that their job is to protect their mother. They're never allowed to just be child and be defenseless. And so they just get sort of sent out into the world, much, much more so than girls. And so they get into all these situations without understanding what's going on until it's too late. Because we're also not doing a good job of educating people, kids particularly, about what's appropriate sexual boundaries and what's not. And so they keep getting in these situations, and it sets them up. And so boys get into all these traumatic situations, and boys sexually abused by women are considered lucky as opposed to victim. And I can tell you, it really, really messes them up. And we have all this sexual compulsivity. You can see it. Sexual compulsivity is simply a symptom of sexual trauma that has not been resolved. It's not an addiction. That's a complete shaming of people about their sexuality without going back and looking at the real issue. And the real issue, go back in. So I've had plenty of guys come out of SLAA and SA and all those other things. We come in, we do the trauma work around their sexual history, and everybody writes a sexual history when they come into my office. And all of a sudden, their sexual compulsivity goes away. And they're available to be in a relationship the way they didn't even know was possible. So so little boys just, whether it's the babysitter playing, and little girl and girls, female babysitters torture their male guy. I can't tell you the number of guys that got sexually abused by their female babysitters. I can't tell you the number of guys that I've seen who were abused by their female school teachers. So we're just sending them out there to the slaughter without protecting them because they're boys. They're supposed to be able to take care of themselves, and that's just unreasonable and not helpful. So, and then rape, and guys get raped. I worked with so many guys who've been raped, gang raped. It's just, and it's really problematic. And one of the other populations I work with is bi and gay men who are heterosexually married. And typically that happens when they get married heterosexually when they've been sexually abused, because they get this rationalization in their brain that I wouldn't be having these feelings if that hadn't happened to me. So it's all very complicated, and we don't do enough trauma work, because everybody's been traumatized to some degree. Everybody. The question is, what's being done about it, or what can be done? And to the level of severity, obviously, there are small traumas and big traumas, but sadly enough, most of us have some big traumas floating around back there that need to be addressed.
Yes, that's really true. Listen, in regards to your book, the last one, Facing the Truth of Your Life, has a powerful title. Can you tell us a bit more about this book and why you wrote it? And how can people get it too? Very important.
Sure. Back in around 2015, I closed my private practice and I needed to make a change in my life. And so I took an 18-month sabbatical and wrote my next book, which is called Facing the Truth of Your Lives. By the way, writing on a cruise ship is the perfect way to do it, I might ask. And it's a perfect writer's retreat. Every time I send a writer one of those and they do it, I said, oh my God, I had no idea. But anyway, because I've been doing private practice for 20 years at that point or longer, no more like 30. It was a long time. And I needed to change. I needed to reach more people. And so I knew writing the book was the big step of that. And eventually that then turned into doing workshops because I could reach more people than I could doing things individually. And so the book itself was what I learned from all of my 20 plus years of therapy and my 30 plus years of consultation and training and all the things that I had learned. And so I take on some sacred cows in our society. And the point of the book, as the title suggests, it's really about taking a hard look at your life and really coming to understand and look at yourself through a different lens. And there are parts of the book that piss off people.
Oh, I'm sure.
Two of the things that get the most brouhaha, there are three things in there that get the most brouhaha. One is that I don't believe in self-love. I think it's a completely distorted and not useful concept. And I think that the issue is self-acceptance. Self-love doesn't change anything. It's like putting salve on a wound to make you feel better, but it doesn't heal. But self-acceptance is where real change can happen. 12-step is a classic example. You can't do anything about being an alcoholic until you accept being an alcoholic. And you either choose that's okay, or you're going to do something about it and change. That's true about every part of our life. So if you have this abuse, you have these behaviors to go with it. So you have to accept that that's who you are and where you are. And is this okay or is it not? What are you going to do about it? Not about it. That's healing. That's moving forward. The other one is that I wrote a chapter in a sort of a DSM kind of format called the Victim Identity Disorder. And that our whole society has really turned into a competition for the biggest victim. And we have to get out of making that okay. The point is to heal the trauma and to stop being a victim, not to glorify it and make that your identity. Because as a victim's a dead end. There's no life. You're just perpetually on the losing end. So you have to come out of that if you're going to actually reclaim your life, take back your power, and be a fully realized adult.
I like your approach, I really do. And I truly believe if we keep talking about this and that and, you know, bringing up like ending domestic abuse myself, you know, instead of bringing like the positive thing, how to claim my life, how to claim this, I think there could not be change.
Yes, I do a lot of that in the workshop. I take on guilt and shame in biggest ways. It's the most intense part of the workshop. It's step four. It's called a guilt-free no.
Focusing on moving forward on that. But listen, thank you so much, Merle, for all your insight and wisdom today. Is there any way for your listeners to stay connected with you and to find your work and how we all connected with you?
Well, absolutely. Well, you can always buy the book. The last one.
Going to. I told you. Amazon.com. Yes. Or my Audible.
And you can. It's an audio. The last book is an audio as well. The easiest way to stay in contact with me through either of my two websites, unspokenboundaries.com, which is where the Seven Steps to Powerful Boundaries is. And that's an on-demand online workshop. So you buy it and you can then take your time to take it. It's not a short experience and it's a deep walk through your life. So just know that, but it will change you. I had recently, there was a woman who interviewed me on her podcast, and then she discovered about the workshop and so forth. So she decided to do the workshop, and then it was about 4 months later, she came back, had me back on the show after she completed the workshop. She was not the same person. She was a completely different energy. She was completely contained. She was inside herself. She wasn't being flirtatious with all the men. She was just fully present as a human being and as an adult. It was really dramatic, the change.
I have no doubt. This sounds terrific. So people can find you to the unspokenboundaries.com. And what?
Unspoken Boundaries. And there's a mailing list there. And they can also find my website, merlyost.com, has a mailing list as well. And all I have tons of articles. I'm an expert also in mental gynecomastia. I've been in numerous documentaries, newspapers, and TV shows around the world. It's my fifth book. And so, and there's a lot of information there about sexually abused boys and buying gay men who just married and a whole lot of stuff on there. A massive mess. It'll take a long time.
This is exciting. Do you have any, do you use social media as well? You have your Instagram
or
anything like that?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, all under my name, and Unspoken Boundaries both.
This is wonderful. Thanks once again to our guest, Merle Yost. And thanks to you for listening. No matter who you are or what you have been through, you can find help and you can find a way out of abuse and into your new life. Send us an email through our website at ludigreen.com. That's ludigreen.com. Or you can call our abuse hotline at 202-643-2327. We'll help you find a way out to freedom. You can find me on social media at Dr. Ludi Green on Instagram and Twitter. You can also help stop abuse by spreading word of our podcast. Just go on Spotify and please give us a 5-star rating or share your comments. Thank you again, and together, let's all find the life you deserve.